How's it going, baseball fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Rasa Petorical, episode number 31. And boy, is it an interesting one, because I'm by myself. Yes, that's right. There is no Matt Goldman this week. There is no Chris Cotillo. There is nobody. Just myself, Chris Schubert, with you here on this lovely Wednesday? It's Wednesday. Wednesday afternoon. You'll be hearing this on Thursday, but I'm recording this Wednesday night. And it should be a good one. I have a special guest coming up in the second half of the program to talk Phillies baseball with. But first, there's one big story that's kind of driving baseball right now. And as a Met fan, it would be uncharacteristic of me to not bring it here to the program and to talk it out with you. And since there's no Matt to sort of keep me in check, I can kind of just say whatever I want. So let's get right into it. And that is this Matt Harvey stuff and his inability to sort of pitch well anymore. It has been such a struggle for him this year, coming off of his workload in 2015, 189 innings plus. You include the postseason and the World Series run, and it has been a struggle. His ERA after his start yesterday has risen to 6.08, and he has fallen to 3-7 on the year. And while those numbers are bad, if you look even closer, it's not very good. K9 rate down from last year, a walk per nine rate up from last year, a batting average on balls in play over 100 points higher than it was in 2015. Nothing seems to be going right for Matt Harvey. The one number that is in his favor, a FIP of 4.38, which shows the defense hasn't been helping him out as much as they could be, probably. You know, the defense has been good. It seems it somewhat falls apart when Harvey starts. And it appears he's going to stay in the rotation. It appears that the Mets are going to go forward, continue with him. And their plan seems to be that they feel that they're better off with him than without him. There are a ton of different options that have been proposed. A potential phantom DL stint where he kind of just works on some mechanical stuff, throws some rehab games, some simulated games, and sort of tries to fix whatever is ailing him and sort of get himself back on track to where he can help this team compete, because they are really starting to get into gear in terms of pitching. Steven Matz, 8 shutout innings today. Noah Syndergaard has been really good. DeGrom has seemingly fixed whatever was ailing him. The velocity's not there yet, but he is starting to turn around and be a good number three after being the ace of the team last year. And he really doesn't have to be that now with the emergence of Matz and Syndergaard. And there's Matt Harvey just kind of sitting around, trying to find his place in this team with how he is struggling. And he has made it very clear that he's not a quitter. He is not going to give up. He feels that he's close to making progress. And his last start was a little better. The velocity was there in the first couple of innings, and it was, you know, showing he was lighting the gun up at 95, 96, which is where baseball fans and Mets fans in particular are so accustomed to seeing Matt Harvey. And it sort of tapered off, which has been a common problem this year for Mets pitchers. It happened with Jacob DeGrom, and that's been his big concern, is if he can keep the velocity past the first inning. Same thing with Matt Harvey. He has seemingly not had any gas in the tank after the second time through the order, and he's starting to get teed up in the third time through the order, and if he barely even makes it through there. One suggestion is to demote him. The Phantom DL we talked about, sort of get him back on track. Another option, the demotion to AAA Vegas. And while I understand the calls for a demotion because he's not helping the team win, and there are probably some sort of better options in AAA Vegas, whether it's Rafael Montero or if they use Sean Gilmartin or Logan Verrett, sort of in the meantime, while he maybe skips 2-3 starts and sort of tries to fix himself in Las Vegas, Vegas is the worst place for him. It's a hitter's park. The pitching is all over the place there. It's a sort of place where Mets fans or Mets brass try to not put their pitchers, these guys. They don't try to keep them there for too long because sometimes it starts to mess with their head. Happened with Zach Wheeler, happened a little bit with Noah Syndergaard, happened with Harvey. Actually, no, Harvey was in Buffalo at the time when that happened. So, you know, it happens. Not really a great place to sort of try to fix yourself after you're struggling at the big league level. And the last thing that the Mets want is to send Harvey down to AAA and have him get shelled against AAA lineups in a bandbox, a hitter's ballpark, and completely mess him up and set him back even more. But there's a larger point that I think needs to be made, and that's why I kind of wanted to talk about Matt Harvey tonight. And I'm by myself, so there's really nobody to sort of counterbalance this this point. But I'm sure that if any of you agree or disagree with this notion, you will leave your thoughts in the comments of the show or get me on Twitter at Chris R. Schubert. In sports, we have a tendency to really lash out and miss out on perspective in terms of statistics, in terms of game results, in terms of our favorite players. And I'm sort of cross over here to another sport. In basketball, the Cleveland Cavaliers are in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they are knotted up 2-2 with the Toronto Raptors. And this is they've lost the previous two after winning 10 in a row to start the playoffs. And a key point of their sort of struggles over the last two games is one of their star players, Kevin Love, hasn't played well the last two games, was actually benched for the entire fourth quarter in the last game because of his struggles. And fans are very quickly sort of turning on him in Cleveland and saying, you know, oh, Kevin Love's not showing up in the big moment. Kevin Love can't do this. Kevin Love can't do that. This is why we shouldn't have brought him here. You know, on and on and on, just saying about how Kevin Love can't compete in the moment. And it's very short-sighted and short-minded to think that way because the last 10 games, he was a key cog in the wheel, being a great three-point shooter, being a great defender, doing everything that the Cavs needed him to be in his role to help them win those first 10 games. But because of the last two, the last memories that we have of Kevin Love were not good, that's the picture that we paint for ourselves. And part of me feels that the same thing is going on with Mets fans and Matt Harvey. Matt Harvey is struggling this year, 3-7. And yes, this is a team that's supposed to compete for a World Series, that's supposed to compete for a National League East Championship. And he is struggling. And it is very fair to lash out at him and to, you know, boo him if that's your prerogative because he's not playing well and because the situation sucks. But let's not forget what he did in 2015 for this team, going 13-8, throwing 189 innings over his innings limit, and then being a key part of a rotation that led the way for this team to get into the World Series. And I get it. In today's society with social media and memes and all this stuff, we are quickly moving from hot take to hot take, from piece to piece, from story to story, headline to headline, looking for the next attention-grabbing thing that can consume our day. And it happens in basketball. It's happening right now with Kevin Love and with Steph Curry and his struggles against the Thunder. It's happening in hockey with, you know, Pittsburgh's goaltending, with St. Louis's goaltending, going back and forth. This is what sports are. Sports are headlines. Sports are stories. But I think we need to keep all of this in perspective. And I think as fans, we don't do that enough. We sort of take the what have you done for me lately approach, which is understandable because if a guy is struggling, you know, he doesn't deserve excuses. He doesn't deserve to be able to say, you know, I don't know what's going on. You know, there should be answers. There should be accountability. There should be a want for the team to play better and to win and to not struggle this way. But a little perspective can maybe skew how we lash out and how we respond to a guy like Matt Harvey, who's going 3-7 with a 6.08 ERA this year. And you know, maybe he will correct these issues. Maybe he'll figure this out. Whatever method that there is to sort of getting Matt Harvey right, if he becomes right again and becomes the Matt Harvey that Mets fans knew in 2015 and 2013, they're going to forget all of this. Right? It's just what fans of sports do. They forget the bad because, you know, there's something good now. If he goes on the DL, misses two starts and comes back and wins every start for the rest of the year, or at least the Mets win every one of his starts for the rest of the year, they're going to forget this little rough patch. And they're going to praise Matt Harvey again and be like, oh, he's the savior. Harvey Day, he's the best. And they're going to forget the times that they wanted him demoted, that they couldn't understand why he was pitching so bad, that they couldn't put it into context. From one failing starting pitcher to another, I think it is fair to call the Shelby Miller project in Arizona a bust. And I didn't think I was going to get here during the show tonight by myself, but I was in the car driving home today, and I was listening to the local Arizona radio here, and this is the day after Shelby Miller got rocked by the Pirates, I believe is who they played yesterday. And it's not good. It is not good here in Arizona. And this goes back to that context sort of conversation that we were having earlier. And the Arizona Diamondback fans and the personalities here in Arizona are sort of judging Shelby Miller. As you look, you know, this is a guy that they traded a lot for. Dansby Swanson, Aaron Blair, Ander Inciarte. That's what they traded. A number one overall pick, and then a first round pick. They traded a top pitching prospect and one of their key young players in Ander Inciarte to bring in Shelby Miller. They brought him in with a coming off a 6-17 season, with a 3.02 ERA. And sabermetrics people like myself will tell you that wins and losses don't matter. That you look at the statistics and Shelby Miller had a decent year in 2015. He was very good in 2013 and 2014 for the St. Louis Cardinals before he was traded to the Braves for Jason Hayward. But at the time that they made that deal, Diamondbacks fans were furious. They were pissed because they gave up three young talents for a guy that was 6-17. And I am with all the stats guys out there that wins and losses don't matter. But to a common fan, when you look at a 6-17 record, you don't associate that with a good pitcher. And that is something that is going to change over time as these statistics become more and more mainstream. But for now, Tony La Russa and the Diamondbacks brass tried to sell their fans on a 6-17 pitcher being their number two to Zach Greinke. And they traded three of their top pieces going forward in order to do it. And he has started the year 1-6 with a 7.09 ERA. And fans are saying, see, that deal was stupid. That deal made no sense. We shouldn't have done that. And maybe they're right. And maybe that he's not the pitcher that he was in 2014 and 2013 with the St. Louis Cardinals. He probably isn't. He's probably somewhere in between. He's probably somewhere in between the 6-17 Shelby Miller and the 15-9 Shelby Miller from 2013. He's probably somewhere in the middle. But because they gave up such a steep price, Dansby Swanson, Ander Inciarte, Aaron Blair, he has to produce at a high enough level for them, for the fans, to really accept that deal as a success. And there are talks of him being demoted now because of his struggles. And this is a Diamondback team that went out and paid over $200 million for Zach Greinke. They traded for Shelby Miller. They have Paul Goldschmidt. This is a team that we wanted to compete this year, wanted to challenge the conglomerate of power in the National League West that are the Giants and the Dodgers. And their key piece, the key piece they sold their fans on is 1-6. So where do they go from here? Well, they could demote him. They have Braden Shipley. They have Archie Bradley in the minors. They can go to either one of those guys and sort of, you know, bring up the future. Bradley has made a couple spot starts for them and has looked really good. They could go to Josh Colemanter, a guy who's been around forever. He hasn't been great. But this goes beyond Shelby Miller. Their bullpen's not pitching well. Zach Greinke really hasn't pitched well this year. He's had a couple good starts lately, and you're starting to see signs of him being the pitcher that they paid $200 million for. But until he does that on a regular basis going forward, he's a question mark as well. You look at the bullpen. Evan Marshall can't get anybody out right now. The lineup. Goldie's been struggling. Sort of turning the page there, getting himself back to the Paul Goldschmidt that has led the league in a lot of statistics. Top first baseman in the National League. Leader on my fantasy team. My fantasy first baseman. His success is my success. So there's a lot of different pieces that aren't really gelling for the Diamondbacks. But Shelby Miller's 1-6 record coming off of a 6-17 season is sort of the headline attention, headline grabbing, attention seeking thing that is out there. And it's fair. You know, this is a team that, like I said, is supposed to compete for a division. And when different pieces struggle, they're supposed to be called out for it. But again, context. Context matters. And the Diamondbacks sold their fans on a 6-17 pitcher and gave up three prospects. And the context of that is we really believe in this guy turning it around and being a key cog in our rotation. We believe him being in the number two. And now that he's 1-6, the fans are starting to turn. And the fans that were already skeptical are now saying, see, I told you so. And it's probably a little too early for that. I'm a big believer in bigger sample sizes. You know, over a whole season, if he's this bad, then yeah, Diamondbacks fans, you can say to your friends and to everyone else that, yeah, I told you so. We shouldn't have done that. But for right now, there's nothing to be gained by being that person, by being the person that goes out and says, you know, oh, I told you so, or oh, the world's ending. We gave up all this for a 1-6 pitcher. This is it. We're going to go back into a rebuilding mode. We're going to have to sell off and do it again. Because what's going to happen is when Shelby Miller turns it around, those same people are going to turn around and they are going to be supporters of Shelby Miller again. And it's because of the ever-changing, constantly evolving social media world that we live in sports, where things are constantly moving back and forth, and you know, people are saying, oh, I counted this team out, or oh, this and that. And they talk in absolutes. And that is a reason why topics like this are talked about so much. It's why Matt Harvey's struggles are talked about as much as they are. It's why Shelby Miller's are. It's why my next guest, when I bring him on, when we talk about the Phillies. Because these are the things that people want to talk about, but we make such quick and rash decisions, and we talk in absolutes, that when things change, we pretend like that other stuff didn't happen. But if we just took a step back and looked at everything from a bigger picture, maybe we wouldn't be so rash and so outspoken before we've seen everything. We've seen the entire Shelby Miller package. Well, we have seen an entire season of Shelby Miller in a Diamondback uniform with Diamondback coaches. A full year of seeing Matt Harvey try to work through these issues, and maybe, just maybe, by the end of the year, he will be back to the way he is, and he will be the pitcher that the Mets need him to be for the postseason. And if they get to the postseason and Matt Harvey is there for them and wins them games, then this stretch in May is not going to matter. If he's pitching Game 7 of a World Series and he leads them to a World Series championship, it's not going to matter. Same thing with Shelby Miller. If Shelby Miller pitches a deciding game that gets the Diamondbacks back to the postseason, this conversation, this 1-6 with a 7.09 ERA, is not going to matter. That felt good. That felt good to do that by myself. Felt a little soapboxy, a little on my own, and I'm sure Matt will give me some hell for doing this on my own, but it was fun. So yeah. So coming up next, the Philadelphia Phillies are taking the baseball world by storm. I'm going to talk to a guy that's going to try to explain it all to me. Next on the Roster Rhetorical. Hello, baseball fans. Welcome back. Roster Rhetorical, episode number 31. Chris Schubert here, and like I promised earlier in the show, special guest here in this segment of the program. I would like everyone to please welcome in a good friend of not only myself, but of the program, MLB.com associate reporter for the Phillies, and my good friend, Evan Wiebeck. Evan?
Chris, thanks for having me.
Evan, I missed you, man.
It's been a long time.
For those that don't know, Evan and I went to school together out here at Arizona State, where I am currently located. I host this podcast. Evan covers the Phillies. I thought perfect way to get back together and talk a little baseball. And Evan, what the heck's going on with these Phillies, man? 25-21?
Man, Pete McCannon has some sort of energy happening on in this clubhouse. It is it's a young team. It's a fun team. And it sounds very cliche, but they go out there and they do give it their all every night. And I mean, it's been working out for them. 25-21. Nobody saw this coming.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, this is a young team. You know, it's a team that's building. They're retooling. They traded Cole Hamels. They got a bunch of prospects back. You know, this was another year for them to sort of stockpile talent. They had some guys that they could move. Carlos Ruiz, if they could get somebody to take on Ryan Howard's contract, they were going to think about moving him. So you thought, they hoped that they could do that. But when you came into this year, you didn't think with the way the Nationals were, the way the Mets were constructed, with the Marlins kind of on the rise, the Phillies and the Braves were looked at as the bottom feeders of the National League East and the teams that those other three could beat up on. But that's not been the case with this team. This team has come out of the gate strong. We're starting to see a little bit more of what we've expected from them. Their run differential is starting to play into their record coming back down to earth a little bit. But all in all, this team has played so well. You know, you look at some of the numbers. Odubel Herrera has been fantastic. We were mentioning off air how good Cameron Rupp has been as an offensive weapon for them, while Carlos Ruiz has been a good defensive weapon. You know, Evan, you've been out there. What has stood out most to you in the early goings as to why this team is so successful?
Well, first of all, I think we need to state that it's obvious there's going to be some progression coming here. They are a fun team and a young team in their building, but they're 14-4 in one-run games with a negative 31 run differential. Not a team that's built to last. But really, I mean, the things that stand out, first of all, back into the bullpen from a team that was – or a bullpen that was, you know, conceived with scrap heaps, basically, coming into spring training with 20-plus non-roster invites. But you see David Hernandez locks down the second, down the seventh, Hector Neris the eighth, and Gmar Gomez the ninth. And obviously, you know, Odubel Herrera has been phenomenal. Michael Franco's had his ups and downs. He definitely shows flashes of the potential that everybody knows he has and he should grow into over the next decade or so.
Let's not forget, he's only 23.
This is true, just like most of the team. Odubel Herrera, only 23 as well. And the rotation, everyone in that is 26 or under, except for Jeremy Hellickson, who may not be in that rotation by the end of the season.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I did want to get to the pitching, and there's a bunch of names in here that we want to talk about. But you brought up Hellickson, and a report came out, I believe within the last day or two, that by Ken Rosenthal, Fox Sports, and he said that Hellickson could be on the move in the case that a good offer is available. So if an offer comes through and they love it, that they're going to move him. And there's, you know, it makes sense why. He has been so good as a 29-year-old coming off of his sort of so-so stint with the Diamondbacks after not being the guy that we saw him be in Tampa Bay. But he's coming. He's 4-3 with a 3.97 ERA. He's been, you know, just a solid guy in the middle of their rotation. You know, you had Vince Velasquez, Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, all these guys. And Hellickson's been in there just leading the way. And you know, we've talked about the good bullpen that they've constructed, with the way the bats have been, but the starting pitching has really been where they've seen their success. So, Evan, I'll go to you. You see the team every day. You sort of talk to them. Hellickson, going to be moved sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what the Rosenthal report said, in that if a good offer does come along, they're going to take it. There's not much upside to holding on to Hellickson. He is 29, and he's on a relatively team-friendly deal as far as the free agent starting pitching market goes, but the Phillies probably aren't going to be serious playoff contenders for the next at least 2 years. And making Hellickson, you know, what, 31 or so by the time that they actually contend, there's, like I said, not much of a point to hold on to him as long as you get a suitable offer. And I'm sure by the time July 31st comes along, if the Phillies regress as we expect they are, you know, Hellickson would seem to make sense as a guy they would move or at the top of that list.
Well, here's something that I think is important to point out. And there are pieces on here that they obviously can move at the trade line, whether or not they're good, right? Before the year, there were a bunch of pieces that you look in this roster and said, okay, if these three or four guys are good, no matter where the Phillies are in the standings, they're going to be able to move them and get some pieces for the future. Well, now you look at this team, they're 25-21, they're in third place, and with the way baseball is constructed now with a wild card, with the second wild card, and really not having to be that much above 500 in order to get that wild card, Evan, do you sense that there could be a change in mindset within the front office, within the organization, that, you know, maybe we don't move these guys. Maybe we don't move a Carlos Ruiz to get a bullpen piece. We don't move a Hellickson to sort of rebuild for the future. Maybe we hold on to these guys and instead we bring in talent and try to maybe push the envelope a little bit, catch lightning in a bottle and try to make the playoffs or at least contend.
Now, I'm not speaking with any inside info here, but I would put those chances very, very close to 0%. General manager Matt Klentak, I mean, he's in his first year. He seems like a very smart, level-headed guy. I don't think he's going to see a reason to deviate from the plan. At this point, it's worked. I mean, it obviously hasn't been him in charge the entire time, but this team, there are so many budding prospects and so many guys on the verge of making their MLB debut. Some guys shining already in Herrera and Franco as future pieces. There's no point in trading any of that away for what might be a flash in the pan this season. Even if they are still in the race on July 31st, at the very least, they'll be non-sellers. But even at that point, I would expect them to try to even build up more for the future here with, you know, the pieces like Ruiz and pieces like Hellickson. Even Gmar Gomez, I would think, is a very strong candidate to get moved at the deadline if he keeps up what he's been doing.
So you think they're just going to stay the course, let the plan work out, and just sort of take 2016 as, you know, look, even if we're successful, the plan is to compete in 2018, 2019, and we're going to stick with that. We're not going to force anything and sort of, you know, put ourselves in a bad spot by doing that. And a team that comes to mind when I say this example is what's happening currently with the Houston Astros. And this is a team that everyone, you know, was surprised that played well last year because of their young talent. They always thought 2017, 2018 would be the time when the Astros would really hit their peak and be a legitimate threat in the American League. And we saw them be that last year, and they made some trades. They got Carlos Gomez, they got Mike Fiers, Scott Kazmir. They went for it, right? They took a chance. They tried to catch lightning in a bottle, and they made a really good run in the playoffs. But now we're seeing maybe that they kind of overextended themselves last year, and they're sort of paying the price this year. So, Evan, what it sounds like you're telling me is the Phillies maybe are sensing that, you know, with the way things happen with Houston, that they're just going to stick with their approach. Their approach is working. Their record is indicative of that, and they're okay with, you know, potentially losing 85, 90 games this year.
Right. And if you want to continue with the Houston example, I mean, you just have to look back to this offseason with the Ken Giles trade. If anything, the Phillies learned from the Astros and that you shouldn't put all your eggs in that one basket of a season of success, thinking that that's going to lead to the future. You know, the Astros thought they were a strong bullpen away from possibly winning the World Series. I mean, I did too. I did pick them in my World Series as preseason predictions, which is another reason why those are a bad idea always.
I mean, they were my American League pick this year.
Yeah, right. No, me too. And
not good.
Yeah, I mean, they sent Vince Velasquez to the Phillies, and, you know, despite previous arm injury troubles that the Phillies are cautious and aware of, you know, Velasquez has been fantastic and largely a cause that the Phillies have a better record than the Astros at this point.
Yeah, Velasquez 5-1, a 2.75 ERA, leading the way for my fantasy team rotation. And they're an inning limit on him. I haven't really seen anything about that, but are they really monitoring his workload this year?
Monitoring, yes. Innings limit, nothing that's been publicized. I'm not sure if they have a specific limit in mind. They definitely haven't made it public. But Klentak's been very clear that he's aware of Velasquez's arm issues. They don't think it's going to be a problem in the future, but they're definitely keeping an eye on it. And I would not expect Velasquez to be pitching every 5 days by the end of the season.
So you think they are going to make sort of maybe go to a six-man rotation, try to get some of these young guys, you know, not so many innings on their arms in a year that doesn't really matter that much.
Right. If there's one argument to keep a guy like Hellickson around until the end of the season, is to take the workload off of some of these young guys who are in their first full big league season.
What's the status of Charlie Morton? Could he come back and sort of fill that role?
Morton's expected to be out for the year. It was a serious hamstring. I believe he tore it. I don't have that right in front of me.
According to Baseball Reference, he's on the 15-day DL. So I just thought maybe I would ask if there was a potential for him to take that spot. But if he's out for the year, then definitely not going to be taking that spot in the rotation. So Evan, take me forward past July 31st, past the trade deadline. What can we expect from the Phillies? What sort of prospects in the system could be called up, could be added all across the board? Pitching, starting, relieving, with the bats. What do you see happening here?
Right. Well, I think if there's one thing that's guaranteed is that you're going to be seeing a very different Phillies team come September, especially with the expanded rosters. There's, in my opinion, there's a very good chance that roster won't include Ryan Howard, whether he's probably not going to be traded, but If you're reading the local Philly papers up here, there is a growing call to possibly release the big piece out of his
159
deal.
Batting average, 227 on base percentage, 8 home runs and 18 RBIs, but an OPS of 592, and he's slugging 365.
Right. Since May started, he's struck out more times than he's gotten on base by a significant margin. It's somewhere around the 5 multiplier.
So is there a real movement for him to be released? Is that something that is being seriously entertained?
I don't know if it's definitely growing. I don't know if it's completely caught fire. I'm fairly new to the Philly sports scene. I do realize the impact that Howard made during those World Series runs and the run of success they had under Ruben Amaro. I would understand if they keep him on to the end of the season and give him a rightful farewell, just like Carlos Ruiz, I'm sure they would love to do. But logistically, it makes more sense to for him either not to be on the roster or for him to be strictly in a pinch hit role with Tommy Joseph starting. You know, Joseph's 24. He's shown some great potential. Pete McKinnon continues to go on about how much he likes his approach at the plate, and I have to agree with him. It seems like he's consistently getting deep into counts and hitting the ball hard, even if it's for an out. You know, in a season like this, even when you're seeing, even if Howard was having a successful season, this is a season for the future, and Howard is not having a successful season by any means. I think the one piece of growing pressure on Pete is that he doesn't really have any other source of power in the lineup. You know, Franco's got 8 home runs, and Howard's got 8 home runs, and beyond that, nobody's got more than 4. One of those is Freddy Galvis, the others are Dubel Herrera, and you don't expect to see, you know, extravagant power numbers from either of those. Odubel's more of a gap hitter guy, and
so prospects. What do we got?
Prospects. I mean, JP Crawford is
top of the list of most people.
Yes, top of the list. Definitely in the organization, arguably in baseball, if you depending on who you ask. I think MLB has him in number 2, Keith Law at number 2 in baseball, but he was just promoted to AAA a few days ago. He'd been spending most of the season in AA. He has shown extraordinary patience. He's only 2-for-11 since he came up a couple days ago in AAA, but he's already walked 4 times, just 2 strikeouts, continuing a pattern of what he was doing in AA. I think it's definitely a matter of when, not if, he comes up this season, and it's just a matter of the Phillies wanting to push back probably his rule.
Super 2 status?
Yes, yeah, Super 2. I was going Rule 5
there. Rule 5. I was like, okay.
That's not quite right. It's a different number, different rule.
Yeah, we don't know the date for that yet, so I'm sure we will begin to see when teams think that date is going to be, because a lot of guys will get called up the day after that everyone thinks that date will be set out. So Crawford's one. Anybody else that maybe is not being talked about that much in terms of the Philly system?
Nick Williams has been struggling. He got off to a tough start down in AAA. He's heated up as of late. I think they're going to let him stay down there for a little bit longer. Cody Ashe isn't a prospect. He's probably going to be the guy that comes in and takes Peter Borges's place if they're looking for an offensive infusion. He's rehabbing right now, coming from an oblique strain in spring training. He should be back in the next 2 weeks or so if they don't just send him to AAA to start off the season. But prospect wise, I think the next 2 starting pitchers that we're going to see in the big leagues aren't any of the big names in the Philly system. I think it's going to be someone like a Zach Eflin or an Alec Asher who kind of round out around like the top 10 area of their most prospect lists.
Okay.
But both have been doing phenomenally in AAA. I don't think you see a super high ceiling in either one of these guys. But I mean, if you look at Eflin, he's 5-0 with a 2.05 ERA. Asher is 3-0 with a 1.53 ERA. They're both dominating AAA. And if the Phillies want to maybe go to a 6-man rotation, or if they need someone to fill in, I think one of those 2 guys is probably going to be the next guy called up rather than someone like a Mark Appel.
And those are guys that you think would be used to potentially lengthen the rotation, cut the innings back for everybody kind of guys?
I think that could be a smart play. It really depends on how they want to use the roster space at this right now. They have Brett Oberholzer in a long man role where he's pitching maybe once a week, and when it does, when he does, he's usually in a mop up situation. So I think that that's a roster spot that they could potentially flip into a guy like Eflin or Asher to maybe take a little bit of ease on the rotation. Of course, Oberholzer's a guy who could do that himself, and they're choosing not to do that with him. So that might give you a peek into their thinking.
All right, Evan, before I let you go, the main topic of today's show before I brought you on, I was talking about Matt Harvey. What do you make of all this? What do you think is going on here? You know, should they demote him? What have you seen?
Man, I saw some of those suggestions about what he should be doing or what the Mets think it could possibly fix his problems, including setting all of his possessions on fire in his locker. I'm a personal
That's a Bobby Parnell. That is a throwback to Bobby Parnell. He did that when he struggled with the Mets.
I can tell you that's a tried and true method for myself. Whenever I run into issues, just light everything on fire and start anew.
Okay.
Yeah, my roommates kind of can't stand it, but you know, yeah. I'm a nice guy, so.
you think it's more mechanical, mental? What's your take?
Frankly, I'm not sure what the deal is with Harvey. I know Cole Hamels actually went through similar issues back when he was a young gun, just like Harvey is, where he kind of got off to a rough start, ERA in the fives, ended up lowering his ERA down to somewhere in the low fours. So he got back on track in the second half of the season, and then, you know, he's been an ace ever since. I think that was about 2 years removed from Hamels' Tommy John surgery.
I don't know that exactly, but another example that people have been throwing out there is Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee struggled, sent to the minors, called back up following year, won the Cy Young. So, you know, there are different methods, and I just wanted to get your take on what they should do. I don't know if there is a right answer, but it's certainly making headlines around the baseball world. Evan, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day. I know you were busy covering a bunch of stuff today, but thank you for joining the program and giving us a little bit of insight as to these amazing Philadelphia Phillies and how well they are playing.
Amazing indeed. You gotta appreciate it while it lasts, I suppose.
Yeah, well, we shall see. It will be an interesting end to the 2016 season. But like I said, Evan, thank you. Good to talk to you as well. We haven't talked in a while, so thanks for hopping on. And to you, all the lovely listeners, this is the time where I tell you that to get this lovely program, you can do it a number of ways. You can get on iTunes, search the Roster Rhetorical in there. It will come up. You can click right on the link and hit a subscribe button, and the podcast will be there whenever you want them, downloaded automatically once they get released. If you're not big on iTunes or you don't have iTunes, you can find the show at the bottom of any article on MLBDailyDish.com. Or at our Blog Talk Radio page, MLB Daily Dish Roster Rhetorical. You can find it there. And before we go, I just remembered that I told Evan I would give him a shout out.
So I was waiting for that.
I know. I could hear you in the background. So if you want to follow Evan to get all your Philly news and Evan stuff like that, it's at Evan Wiebeck, right?
At Evan Wiebeck, W-E-B-E-C-K.
Yes, and you can follow me at Chris R. Schubert. And the show at MLB Daily Dish. So, Evan, once again, thank you. And to all you baseball fans, I will see you guys next time.
Thanks, Chris.